All right, we're back and we're on session 10.
Yeah. In this session, we're going to look at the issues of communication. There are things to know. You're going to be interacting with people. I mean, deacons, it's one thing if you're on a building team or you're pounding nails and that sort of thing, but as a deacon and extension of the mercy of Jesus Christ into the world and to hurting people, you're going to be communicating, and there are some ways that you can do that wrong. and I know, because I've done it.
Yeah, I have too. We're all guilty of wrong communication.
So we're going to look at what does it mean to be the person who's communicating. Now, this is just the something I found online about how all the things you got to keep in mind when one person is trying to communicate to another. Turns out the Bible says a whole lot about communication, just as some general principles. And so, this is my one that I come back to very often, James 1. Know this, my beloved brothers, this older translation, this is from the New English. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Well, that didn't get on the slide, but slow to become angry. So that quick to hear, slow to speak. The old proverb is God created us with two ears and one tongue.
Yes.
He intended us to listen twice as much as we talk. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, only such as for building up as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. Soft answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up anger. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt. In other words, salt is used back then as a preservative,
right,
but also to add flavor to life. But so that you may know how to answer each person. And then the prayer from Psalm 41, set a guard, 141, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth.
Yeah.
Keep watch over the door of my lips. Keep me from talking too quickly. There's one whose rash words, Proverbs, are like sword thrusts. That's a picture, isn't it? But the tongue of the wise brings healing.
Wow, yeah, so powerful. Yeah,
just a few more. Proverbs 15:2, the tongue of the wise commands knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. Psalm 14, let the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart, be acceptable in your sight, O Lord. Proverbs 18, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame. Just talking with Abby before we started about when I was in a counseling course in seminary, one of the things the prop said as he reflected on my transcripts and my interactions with people, he said, you're trying to come to an answer and a conclusion and a fix it way too quickly. People need to be heard first. Heard that they feel like you're with them. So if anyone gives an answer before he hears, it's falling shame. But avoid irreverent babble, for it will lead people into more and more ungodliness. That's a good word for those of us who are preachers. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. And when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. And boy, we could go on and on. I mean, there would be at least 3-4 other pages that we, especially from Proverbs, about talking. So communication is an important subject if you're going to be serving.
Right. And there's such a common theme here of that wisdom of you hear and you understand something. It's even why we talk so much about the decision making. If you just go off of maybe you act before you've really heard, listened, heard out the whole situation, you may very much still come up with something that is going to be hurtful because you didn't know X, Y, or Z about the situation. And so you see that common theme of the, just being quick to listen, slow to speak and give your thoughts, because otherwise you end up that the word folly kept coming up again.
Right. Yeah, that's a humbling word, right? This is... I'm going to give you, I study communication, I teach preaching, you can check out my course, and I know how to communicate to a large group, and I'm pretty good at it, frankly.
You are.
Here's just an idea of what is involved in communication. You've got one person who's encoding a message. In other words, the words that are used are designed to try to create a picture in the mind of somebody else. So it's encoded there. You send the message, and it goes through a channel of, you know, is it phone? Is it email? Is it text? Is it? There's a channel, and there's noise. In other words, there's all sorts of things that can get in the way.
Distractions going on at the same time.
Right. And then the receiver gets the message and has to decode it. And so for a few minutes, we're going to look at, you know, that you've got to decode the message of people who are talking to you. What are some things you should be keeping in mind there? A man named Moravian many years ago came up with a 7-38-55 rule. In other words, he studied a group of people and how they communicated with each other. And his conclusion was that 7% of communication is the spoken word. In other words, if you're just looking at the words, it's only 7% of communication. 38% is the tone that you use, the volume that you use, pauses that you use. And in fact, the tone can change the message, even though the words are the same.
I was just thinking that same thing. It's like, imagine if you lost the ability to read tone, you would have no ability to really talk to a lot of people,
right?
Because that matters on, what's being said.
Yeah. The classic example is, Paul saying, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Just think about emphasizing each word. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. I can do all things through him. I mean, go on and on. Each word and the meaning
changes.
Is just changed just a little bit. But the shocker to me when I first read this was 55% of communication is body language. In other words, how do you sit? What's your eye connection? Do you hold the eye of the other person? Do you lean forward?
Right, the hands crossed.
Yeah, somebody's listening to you like this. I was sitting like this in church a few weeks ago, and all the pastor preaching that day looked at me, and I thought, oh no.
Yeah, this is how I am.
I just communicated something just by body language. So I'm preaching. We talk, preaching class, we talk a bit about body language, and in fact, I'm in the process of developing a second course on preaching, and we're going to look at that even more fully because 55%.
That's more than the majority there.
So, two things. One, you've got to be aware of something about the body language of the person who's sending you a message. Secondly, you've got to be aware of your body language as you receive that message. So, that's just the beginning. So we're going to talk about active listening. It involves eye contact, reading emotional cues. If somebody says to you, I'm fine, and they look like the dog just died, you've got to interpret that message.
Right.
Giving feedback, checking, do I have this right? Summarizing, paraphrasing, questioning, and tell me more. Avoiding distractions.
I think that avoiding distractions, like as I look at this list for my active listening, I feel like, pretty confident about my active listening skills, but that one can get me a lot, the distraction. I think in the world we live in today, you've got your phone constantly sitting there. Right now I have two little children, so I run into a lot. Again, I think how you treat your spouse is really important, but I am the queen of my husband trying to tell me something, and I'm just like texting someone else on my phone. And it's like the amount of times he's been like, Abby, like, you do this to me all the time, and I'm like, not okay. So it's easy in the world we live in to be inundated by distractions, but when you do that, you communicate to the person that you don't care what they're saying, and you can easily miss what they're really saying if you're distracted at something else.
Yeah, my wife just said to me the other day, says, you forgot to get something at the store, and just, didn't you hear me? I said, no. Well, we had had this conversation beforehand, and she said something, and mine went off.
Right, you're already thinking of the next
direction.
Thing. Or
another direction. So anyway, all of this is part of you as a deacon are going to be engaging people. And sometimes it's, you know, you face-to-face with the person. Sometimes it might be two of you, which is very helpful because, you know,
two people can be reading.
Right. You can talk later about what, you know, what you heard and how you heard it and what the cues were. So in active listening, here are things to be aware of in regarding particularly body language. Eye contact, high involvement means you've got a connection with the eyes. Low involvement means somebody won't look you in the eyes, or you wander away with your gaze to something that's happening beyond or whatever. All of a sudden, that listening has been damaged. Direct body and facial organization, you're looking at the person, you're facing them, you're not involved, busy doing something else. Indirect. Low involvement is indirect body and facial. A leaning toward or leaning away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talk to somebody, I did a promotion once for church planting, and this was for my denomination, and so they came to my office to film this, and I had this great idea. I had this old watch that belonged to my father's uncle, and I was talking. But later I saw the film. And I was slouching in my chair, like,
right.
I thought, can we do this over, please? Because I just, it just...
It distracts you from what you're saying when you see yourself.
And I'm thinking, somebody listening to this, you know, I was communicating in, you know, not consciously, but unconsciously, subconsciously, that this wasn't really all that important to me. How are we looking with our body? Open body positions, close in. Touching someone. Right? Now, in this world, you've got to be very careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's male on female, female on male. Very careful. Or even with children. But the reality is when you're meeting someone, a strong handshake looking in their eyes, it's good to see you, communicates a ton. And even when it's somebody you know, a good friend, and you put an arm around somebody who's hurting, that communicates a great deal. So expressiveness, facial expressions, vocal expressiveness, relaxed laughter is the opposite of that, monotone voice. Composure, nervous mannerisms, are you worried about stuff?
Right.
Do you sound it? Is your posture relaxed but not too relaxed? As opposed to those things that are low involvement and engagement. A floor holding. In other words, the idea is we're exchanging times when we are engaged and we're holding the floor. You know, often sometimes you say somebody's holding the floor that they're up talking. Well, yeah, I'm talking now, and we do that. Positive reinforcement, you nod your head at someone. Smiling is always good. Vocal energy, fluent speech, gestures, as opposed to the opposites of those things. All of those things are important to the communication process and how you meet somebody. And you can bet that if you're meeting somebody who's got a need, you've got to be very attentive to listening to them, to hearing their words, but also their body language. Very attentive to what they are saying, but also what they are doing as you listen in. And so that's just something about active listening. There's also a thing called empathetic listening, where you're listening not just for what they're saying, but for the feelings behind
mm-hmm.
it. And even when I was first learning this skill, after I was in ministry, I realized I was doing a lot of counseling and frankly was pretty lousy at it. But later on, I would tell people who are married, come to you, would you meet with me and my spouse for a marriage counseling? And I'd say, no, you don't want me, because first five couples I met with got divorced. So that usually solved that problem. But we'd find them a qualified counselor then. But the whole idea is active listening means I'm actively listening to you, but I'm not just listening to your words. I'm not just taking that in. I'm listening to what are the feelings behind that? And so the counselor that I studied with gave us a formula to work with and sent me home to do any activity he gave us I'd have to do with my wife, which was fascinating. But he said, here's just a, have the person say for 10 minutes that you want to get to know somebody better, have them say for 10 minutes that you don't interrupt, and they just say, I feel blank when blank. So, you know, it usually starts out really slow. I feel happy when it's sunny outside. I feel blank, blank, blank. And then we had expanded to 15 minutes, and then we had expanded to 20 minutes. And after a while, you get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And but it was to teach us to listen to feelings. What are the feelings? And even to ask somebody, well, how does that make you feel? How does that make you feel? And sometimes, you know, we don't pay attention to feelings, especially you may have grown up where feelings were put down, where they, mm-hmm. you know, were not acknowledged. You know, and it'll be hard for you to talk about feelings. It might be hard for you to recognize feelings in another person. But it is essential. It is essential that you know the feelings yeah. of the other person, not just the facts. And then reflexive listening is even to reflect back to the person what they're feeling. So as a listener, you know, I would have to say in this counseling training course, oh, it seems to me that you say you are saying that you feel blank, you feel this way when this kind of thing happens. And what about this kind of thing? That's close to that. Do you feel the same way about that? Do you feel the same? So I'm trying to reflect back to them what they're saying to me. That, you know, this is, if you're married, ooh, try this with your spouse sometime. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's difficult. Because when I first did this with my wife, okay, I feel blank when. So first started with all the fun stuff, you know. I really feel like I love you when, I feel blank when. And we started getting into some stuff that was a problem that we hadn't addressed. You know, one of the big tensions for us every was the holiday season. When we were first married, we lived near our parents, both sets. And my wife's mother would plan Thanksgiving somewhere around Christmas. Would plan Thanksgiving for the next year, and my mother would be planning about Monday before Thursday before Thanksgiving. Holiday here in the United States. And so there was this constant thing, well, who are we going to have holiday with? Christmas, New Year's, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so at one point she got to the, she says, I feel so frustrated that, you know, my mother wants a commitment and I can't give it to her because I don't know what your mother's doing. And so we had, but it led us into a conversation that came
to,
solution. Right, it came to a solution. And and so a decision about what we are going to do as far as on this, you know, we'll do these holidays in these years, et cetera. The point is, when you get to that kind of empathetic, reflexive listening, you'll start getting to the depth of the heart of a person.
Right. What are the things that are on their heart right,
right.
now and affecting how they feel and affecting why they're making the decisions they're making?
Right. And that will lead you to better better hear and be a better servant of mercy of Jesus Christ in His
mm-hmm.
name. Because you will be not just addressing the immediate need, but the person's need to connect with people. Remember when we talked about that? He said it's got to be done in relationship. If it's not just handing out handouts, you're not sharing the love of Jesus with people. So having said that, there's this other issue, and that is confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to encounter people who will share with you information that should not be shared. And in fact, it can be very destructive if it's shared. Now, in our world today, at least here in the United States, the lawsuits are happening all the time because somebody
sure.
broke confidentiality. And I came across, you know, the rules for doctors. So if you're a doctor, what are the rules about, or your health professional? My wife is a nurse who teaches nursing. And What are the guidelines for keeping things confidential? Right. Here's their list for a medical professional. First of all, consent. Do they give you consent to share? That's important. You know, one of the things when I do training with elders and deacons in my home church, I say, when things you hear, you have to ask, can I share this with? I ask people, you know, when I'm talking with some of the people I'm mentoring in ministry, they'll tell me something. I say, can I share this with my wife? I would like her to know that we can both pray for you knowledgeably. Court order, of course, sometimes, you know, you may be called. I've been called upon to be examined by a court because there was a lawsuit and I had met with the child in counseling situation. And so I got a court order that I had to share with the attorneys involved about this situation. Continued treatment. Sometimes a clinician may release confidential information. In other words, continued treatment of a person. And for instance, you know, I will have to give my doctor permission to share that with somebody that he has referred me to. So, I need more treatment. This person's got to know what I've been dealing with. What complies with the law, complies with mandatory reporting statutes. In other words, if you know that you're in a situation where the person you're talking to has abused a child or has been abused by somebody else, you've got to report that. You can't hold that in. Communicate a threat. In other words, if you know that what has been shared with you, somebody is threatening another person or is being threatened, that's the kind of thing that you break confidentiality for. But other than that...
Right, then this is the key thing here, yeah.
Other than those things, keep it to yourself. So much damage is done when confidentiality is broken.
Somebody shares something about somebody else.
So much damage is done within the church in particular. And so, within deacons and deacons meetings where maybe you're sharing about the various needs you're dealing with people and somebody that has listened to you goes and says to somebody else, hey, did you know that so-and-so, has this challenge, this problem, this need? That's one of those things that's going to give the church a bad, bad reputation. So, be aware. Be aware. And I said when we ended the last session that we'll look at finances next.
Now
that was my mistake. Now we're going to look at finances.